people may or may not know this. I generally don't give up on things when I love them a lot and I'm passionate about it. I always tell my kids, be passionate about what you want to do, and then it's not a job, it becomes your passion and an amazing career. If it's a job, I don't know why some people wake up every day for the grind. We grind, but we grind and do it passionately.
From the American Craft Spirits Association and Craft Spirits Magazine, this is the Craft Spirits Podcast. I'm John Page, and today on the program, we're joined by ACSA's president, Gina Holman. Gina is also a founding partner of J. Carver Distillery in Waconia, Minnesota, an ISG-certified sommelier, and the vice president of the Minnesota Distillers Guild. In late April, Gina joined me and Jeff Cialetti to discuss her start in the spirits industry, the origins of J. Carver Distillery, her priorities as president of ACSA, what drives her to volunteer, and much more. To start, we asked Gina to explain how she became the director of liquor operations for a city in Minnesota, and it turns out the story begins in her teenage years.
I started in the industry when I was 15, and really the draw was we have a big, huge family, and so it's always, you know, how many people are coming over to your house? Oh, you know, the immediate family is 45. So it's just always been the big family, lots of food, lots of wonderful conversation. And of course, there might be some imbibing going on. And so then one of my neighbors was working at a local private country club, believe it or not. And so they were looking for a dishwasher and a bus person. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to go apply for this job because I want to buy a car, right? That's what we all do. But in the industry, believe it or not, the greatest gift of that job is it was a private golf course. It was a country club, Minnetonka Country Club. And so I was able to learn all the best of the best at 15, right? Because it was all the members wanted their particular scotch or their particular, you know, vodka at the time, or all of these gins that, and this was in 1984, believe it or not. So when people laugh and say, how long have you been in the industry? And I say 38 years, you know, they ask if I'm 75 and I say I am, especially when I'm doing the tours. And then, you know, all the guys laugh and say, oh my gosh, okay, we'll drink more whiskey then if we look like that when we're 72. So it's kind of cute. But the crazy part is at that age, the wine list, right? I knew the difference between a Puy Fousse and a Puy Fumé. I already knew the Languedoc region when it wasn't the Languedoc region. I knew the difference between Bordeaux and Burgundy. And this was all 16, 17, 18 years old. So then when I was 18, I asked our general manager and the bar team if I could bartend, because I had been watching them. And legally, right, we know that you can serve in the industry at 18. You can't drink until you're 21. So I think that's why I was just drawn to, I want to learn what they were doing behind the bar because it looked really cool. And shocking, I loved talking to people, and I couldn't talk to them the way that I saw the bartenders talking to people at the bar. So when I was waitressing or, you know, being a bus person, and then I was also, I did everything. I was on the cooking line. I was like little mini chef, everything I could learn. I wanted to take it all in. And so then I went to college to, believe it or not, I love theater. I love music. I went to college to become a speech communication and English teacher for secondary ed. And once I was in the education portion of it, my heart wasn't there to teach high school, though I love teaching. So there was a tour group, and ironically, it's crazy, people can't believe it, it was Up With People, and they came to our college. And so at the time I was dating David, he's my husband now, crazy, that many years ago. And so we went to go see the show, and what I loved about it is the whole community mindedness of it, you know, doing really cool things in the community, working with local associations and groups. And then of course the show was cool. And So I chickened out to apply for it. It was my senior year of college, and I wanted to go so desperately, and I didn't do the interview. I totally backed out. And so David and one of my best friends the next day threw me in the car and drove me 2 hours north to watch the show again in Minnesota. And they forced me to interview. And then I got the okay.
What kind of show was it?
It was amazing. Up with People. So it was 128 students from 28 different countries coming together to do a musical and then going into the community and doing really cool stuff.
Okay.
We'd go to food
Didn't they used to
banks.
do, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Jeff.
I was gonna ask, didn't they used to do like halftime shows like in the early
Yes.
Super Bowls, like before this
Yes.
became really
Yes.
celebrity studded?
Yes. Yes. And so then I went to there is an end to how I got into the industry, but this is what's so cool about it is because we traveled across the country. We were in the United States for 6 months, and then we were in Europe for 6 months doing the show. And so we lived with host families and really got to know all of the local stuff happening in communities, right? Like the tourism and what made a city tick and what made a state tick and what made a country tick and what made great little villages in Switzerland or Germany or Austria or Belgium, Netherlands, Italy. I mean, we went to France, we were all over. And so my host family in the northern part of France, I stayed with them for about, oh, I think it was 4 weeks. And what I didn't realize, because we were setting up that city to get host families when the tour group would then come in. And what was crazy is they were, I think, maybe 10 kilometers from the Champagne region. And I didn't even realize it, right? I mean, I knew where I was, but didn't know where I was. And so I stayed in their little community. It was Toul, France. And then we would go up to this beautiful little village. And my host father loved playing guitar. So we would totally just jam and sing in the little cottage. And then I'd look out and there was just rows and rows and rows of grapes. And so I just go frolic and pick grapes and then go back into the little village and we'd do our thing. Well, so that was a great year. Learned so much. Learned the humility of one of the greatest things is, just going into these little villages and seeing everybody so excited to show you their little liqueur or their beer or their spirit or their wine that they've just poured their hearts and souls into. And so then I came back in the end of, I was there the entire year of 93. Then I came back to Minnesota, clearly, Victoria, Minnesota. And I went to our local little family-owned and operated restaurant that opened up when I was gone, and I was all suit and tied up, right? I mean, it was all fancy pants because I knew I wasn't going to go back to Minnetonka Country Club, and those members were so generous to almost sponsor me to go into Up With People. So I'll always love that those members. And so I went down to this local mom-and-pop place, and I'm all like dressed to the nines, and the guy that owned it said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, here's my resume, and I just got back from Europe, and I'm hoping that you'll hire me." And he said, "Yeah, throw on a t-shirt and some jeans. See you down here at 4 o'clock." So I started working there then, and my boss of now gets to the point, the Muni, Wayzata Wine and Spirits, he hired me to run the liquor store. And what's unique, especially for our members, is we understand how unique liquor laws are in all of our states, right? So is it state run? Is it city run? Is it a control state? In Minnesota, it's really unique because we have what's called municipals. So I ran a municipal liquor operation that was run by the city of Wayzata. And what was unique about that building that I ran from, geez, they gave me an internship. I went back and finished my degree. Then became director of operations the following year, and then ran the entire operation, the liquor store and the restaurant. And what was unique is then all of the money that we generated, right? We were an enterprise fund. All of that money that we generated went to pave the roads. It went to the streets department. So it's kind of, I always think of the city of Pennsylvania being a state run, and then all of the money that they make goes to budgets and things within the state. So ours was city. Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful city, amazing people that live in this town. It's probably one square mile, gorgeous. It's, we call it the jewel of Lake Minnetonka, Wayzata, where we were. So beautiful lake community, and people would come into the restaurant, and it was an open concept, liquor store on one side, bar and grill on the other. And we called it the Cheers of Wayzata. So the staff, in my opinion, was the heartbeat, right? All of you in ACSA, the staff, the board, past presidents, Margie, were, it's the heartbeat of ACSA. And that's what the Muni felt like. And so everybody would come in. We'd know everybody by name. We knew what they were going to eat. We knew what they were going to drink. You know, tons of really amazing conversation would happen. And, you know, we'd just be there for all of the people coming into the Muni. So we called it the Cheers of Wayzata. And it was just a great place. So thank goodness my boss there was amazing. And think of it, my boss was the city manager. I was responsible to the mayor, the council. And so it was, you know, right in line with everybody that was department heads within the city. And that really was just the gateway then, I would say, for my passion of then wanting to see everything family owned and operated, what was, you know, niche in the market. And everybody in Wayzata then would come back to the Muni and they'd say, oh my gosh, Gina, we were in Germany and saw this amazing liqueur. Could you ever get it here? We were in Croatia and I had this almond liqueur. It was over the moon. Can you see if you can find this somewhere in the Minnesota marketplace? Or I went to Italy and I had this great wine. Is there a distributor in Minnesota that could bring it in for us? And so that got me so excited to then realize that while I was in Europe with Up With People, I was generally visiting a lot of these villages that all of the customers were. So it was very heartfelt for me to try and find that little experience, right? That terroir and that village, that spirit, that passion that somebody crafted from, you know, the talent and their palate. I was always so intrigued by people with their amazing palates. And so I went to my boss and I said, you know, my background is education and clearly I love, you know, talking with people and hearing people's stories. Is there any way I could go back to school and become a sommelier? And that was my bucket list. I had 10 things I wanted to do, and that was on my bucket list. And he said, sure. And I knew that because we were an enterprise fund, I did my job. You know, we had 4 kids under the age of 8. So it was a pretty busy schedule for those couple of years, and went back and the class that I studied with was amazing. We're all very good friends to date. And the crazy part about it is it was great to get the sommelier title. What I wanted to do was I wanted to teach. So I went on and studied for another year or so. And then I taught for the International Sommelier Guild here in Minneapolis for about 5 years, as well as running the Muni. And then, of course, having 4 kids and David in tow. So it was very much a family effort. So I think a lot of kids are read other nighttime stories. My kids, I read them The World of Wine and and everything there was to know about terroir and dirt and climate and maritime versus, you know, cool climate and continental versus other types of climate. So that was the story. So then I'm at the height, in my opinion, like right in my head, I'm like, oh my gosh, you did it. You were invited to Pinot Camp in Oregon with a lot of other sommeliers across the country. And as I was about to get on the plane, my now business partner, Bill, said, hey, what are you doing? Can we chat? And I said, well, sure. When I get back, I said, I'm going to Oregon, going to go drink some really good Pinot Noir and Pinot Gris and Riesling. And, you know, I was just out of my mind excited. And he said, all right, well, when you get back, give me a call. Well, what was interesting is in Minnesota, I just realized Minnesota. Okay, I am from Minnesota. That long, drawn out O. So in Minnesota, the liquor laws, right, were very archaic. We were seeing what was happening, you know, on the coasts. And the crazy part of just ACSA for me is one of the first people that I ever met in the craft spirits world was Paul Letgo from Few. And he was launching Few and going into other markets. So he came to the Minneapolis market, believe it or not, when I was, of course, like buying the spirits for Wayzata Wine and Spirits. And that's crazy to me to remember meeting him and hearing his story, and then to listen to the podcast of Paul, you know, talking about what it was like to go into other markets and just passion and innovation and, you know, commitment, integrity. I mean, all of that, that's what we do every day, right? I mean, it's not about the fame, the glory, and it's clearly not about the money. Because if any of us knew that we were in it for the money, nobody would be in it. And so it's the passion, it's the craft. And so when I came back from Portland, then I met with Bill and he said, you know, the laws changed to allow for micro distilleries in Minnesota. And he said, I would just love to chat with you to see what do you see in the marketplace? What do you see in the industry? And what's crazy is think of this, that was in 2011, right? So that a long time ago. And I said, well, you know, to me, family owned and operated and local and craft doesn't necessarily have to mean it's here. It's just what is family and craft and innovation and local. And then I want to tell everybody's story and then sell it here in Wayzata. And I really saw that changing. There was just a huge paradigm shift in the hospitality industry and the liquor industry that everybody then, you know, what's this local thing? What does this mean? And so then Bill said, well, what do you think about starting a distillery? And I said, wow, if you're going to do it now. I mean, get in the saddle now. Cause it's going to, from what I see, it's going to blow up and it's going to be super cool. And that's what we were talking about, even at the convention in Portland, right? When Margie was talking about in 2010, 250 micro distilleries. And now in 2020, what are we saying? Like 2,700. So how fascinating and what growth and innovation and creativity in a decade. And so Bill said, well, would you ever want to join us? And yes, please. And so they brought me on as founding partner and you know, we just talked through what would it be like to be a grain to glass distillery. Waconia, where we're located, it's really the heart of our farming community in Carver County, though it's a really beautiful, it's situated beautifully between the suburbia, the city, and then agriculture, you know, just that agritourism. So we're just far enough out from Minneapolis, St. Paul, right? We say that we're 30 minutes from home base for all the baseball aficionados out there. And so we're really passionate about that grain to glass mentality for us and everything that we can do locally. We do, collaboration is huge for our team. And my business partners, they were so thoughtful about our business strategy. We knew that we were going to stay grain to glass always. And we had our eyes set on long-term aging 10 years ago. And I thought that was fascinating to create something from scratch, a business from scratch, you know, just that grassroots effort of passion and innovation and integrity and intention and just doing what we said we were going to do. And even if we fell flat on our face, at least we were going to try to do what we said we were going to do. And really thoughtful about working with local barrel companies here. So we have 1,800 barrels that we put away And the crazy part of our building, we designed a whole building that we never built, which is crazy in and of itself. So thank goodness for cold Minnesota winters, because we didn't want to do construction 40 below zero. And so there was a car dealership, Pontiac car dealership in Waconia. And so we looked at it initially, and then worked with the owner of the dealership, and so grateful that that's J. Carver Distillery now. And so we have a beautiful barrel house in back with 1800 barrels. And now this year, this December into January, 2023 into 2024, we have all of our labels for our 7-year whiskeys. And we just launched our J. Carver 7-year in December. It was a huge success, thanks to all of the amazing J. Carver friends and fans in Minnesota. And really the passionate people within the restaurant and retail side of hospitality that believed in us, right? Sometimes local can have a connotation that some people are like, nah, it's local, it's not good. Or, oh, it's craft, it's not good. And then they taste it, and there's a pause and a moment where they say, wow, congratulations, this is delicious. And I think for all of the craft spirits producers listening to this, they can have a little bit of a smirk, because they know how good that feels to hear that from somebody else. We can drink our Kool-Aid all day long, right? Drink our whiskeys and our spirits and our vodkas and our gins and rums and now American single malts that everybody's so excited about, and then say, I think it tastes good. What about you? And I think that's a really important distinction.
Did you think that attitude has changed considerably though, since now that, you know, the craft industry has matured, that sort of notion that, oh, it can't be good, it's craft. Would you say there's been that kind of gradual evolution in the consumer's attitude towards craft products since you, you know, since you founded?
I do. And I think it's a huge amount of gratitude for all of the innovators, all of the Pauls and the Toms and, you know, the amazing craft distillers that poured their heart and soul into it and really paved the way for those of us coming alongside them to say, we don't want to put anything out into the market unless it is quality, right? And I think that there's just that attitude of craft spirits producers that it's quality, not quantity. It's passion and innovation. You know, sometimes craft could almost be a swear word in the industry, right? I think that when we bring along the word of innovation and collaboration, then the consumer believes in us. And I think that's an important shift, that the consumer has become very an aficionado in craft spirits. And to see the consumer knowing a lot more sometimes than even people, newbies coming into the industry, is fascinating to me, because they've been following a lot of the micro distilleries and the craft spirits producers for a decade. And they can tell stories sometimes better than we can tell our own story, because they've been watching us evolve.
So one thing that I kind of wanted to bring up too was some of ACSA's, you know, legislative priorities. And you had been co-chair, you still are co-chair of the State Guild Committee, and now sort of the biggest issue that ACSA is working on really is a state-by-state issue. It's DTC, obviously. So your kind of experience, you know, leading the Guild Committee, do you think that's sort of helped position you, especially in your new, you know, your new role as president, as we tackle this really complicated issue that really is a state by state issue?
Yes, I think it again is that the experience, all the experiences really for me have it's humbling to just look back and see having a restaurant, having a liquor store, understanding the three-tier system. What is it like to be a craft spirits producer? What is it like to be, a larger brand? What is it like to hear the consumer say, I want that craft spirits, I want that local whiskey from name whatever state, because I think it's fascinating now, especially with how engaged the guild presidents and leadership are across the country. I think that's exciting that we have 50 guilds, right? I mean, that's something to really be excited about. And the direct to consumer, I really think it's going to be a shift in our industry. And I think it's going to be a really good shift because it's coming from the consumer. The consumer wants it. And when the consumer wants to see a shift in laws and in small business, then we really do get to have some high-level conversations with our elected officials. And whether it's I always say it starts from that local. So to understand that perspective of working for a city and now understanding what it's like to work with our local legislators and House of Representatives here, our senators here in Minnesota, to even get a law passed so that we could sell 1,750 per person per day in Minnesota. And without the help of, PT and Mark Schilling and Margie and you and Dan, I mean, a phone call away, right? To say, help, help, what did you do? Going off of all of the passion with Nicole Austin and Mark Schilling early on, and to say, we can do this together, I think is a really important conversation piece. And I think because of the fact that ACSA really is a trusted voice in the craft spirits industry, we do have the attention and the ear of Congress, of everybody, to say this is important. And really, who's sitting at the table to have the conversation is important for me too, because you really do need those that have worked alongside FET. For example, how did we get FET passed? And that was just a lot of grassroots effort, a lot of phone calls, a lot of trusted conversation to those people that care about small business, care about our industry, and want to make sure that we survive.
Gina, I'm curious. So you're the president of ACSA now. You've been vice president. You're also the vice president of your state guild, right?
Yes.
And you, I think you had served as like president of your school district foundation board too, right?
Yes.
What drives Gina Holman to, put yourself out there into these initiatives and to try to help these organizations?
Integrity, compassion, relationships, innovation, performance, not the way that people think it. I would say performance, that I try to be committed to deliver and demonstrate excellence in everything I do. Innovation, it's that learn from experiences of the past and use those insights to invent a better future. Relationships, right? We build through trust and collaboration in order to take action and really find those solutions. And compassion, I saw this with my every team that I've ever had. Work alongside them, walk in the shoes of people, and we serve those that we work with, right? I mean, to to really understand. There was one day in the restaurant when we had just opened up our new building. And since I started from the ground up, right, I think that's what drives me, is that I try and come in on the ground level and learn as much as I can. It's never my intention to be the president. It's never my intention to, you know, be on the board. It's my intention to build those relationships through collaboration in order to take action and find solutions and whatever I'm passionate about. And so I said to, it was stressful. Restaurants are stressful for anybody that knows high volume restaurants. And so I told my cooks and my chef to go front of house. And I told my front of house staff to go back of house. And I told everybody that was in the restaurant, you know what, you're probably not going to see a bill today for everything, because I think it's going to be a mess. Though I wanted my staff to see, you know, this is what it's like to be behind the line. And if a mistake is made, it's affecting all of us, not just you and your table. And I think that that's a really good example of what we do in this industry, is if a mistake is made, we're in a, and there's a challenge, let's come together and try and fix it. I would say one thing I learned so beautifully is, and I thank my business partners for this, I would say 5 years ago, I hated the word strategy. Drove me nuts. Like, it scared me. The word strategy scared me. And because if I didn't have the strategy, I felt like I knew I had to have the strategy, and then I wasn't the smartest person in the room. And that was in my, that was my ladder of assumption, right? I had to be the smartest person in the room or I wasn't going to be invited to the table. And then what I realized is, nope. Everybody here is way smarter than you. They're inviting you to the table because you have something to share as well. And that was humbling. And to just talk through things, not to have the answers, but to really throw everything out there and then zone in and see what was possible. You know, how can we do this together? And what is possible that everybody's going to probably compromise something. And we learned that here in Minnesota with our liquor laws being changed. It took us 7 years, truly. You know, Chris Montana was here and working alongside all of us. And Chanel was working. I mean, all of us that were starting distilleries here. And we got, you know, the 375, and we wanted a 750. So that shift in that conversation was seven years of a conversation to finally get a 750. But we all compromised, and then we worked collaboratively with local wineries and cideries and breweries. And, you know, we all gave up something. We all made a concession. And I think that that's just what we do to understand that any forward movement is at least forward movement. Any conversation's a good conversation, as long as a door's not getting slapped in your face, right? I think that we can all, we can agree to disagree. We can also agree to honor each other at the table and have an intelligent conversation to allow everybody to hear everybody else's story. And for our story with ACSA is, we're craft spirits, and right, a solid foundation was laid and was established over a decade with so much dedication and thoughtfulness and determination from all the founding members, past board members, presidents, committee chairs, I mean, countless volunteers. And that's made ACSA, like I said, that recognized voice for craft distillers now in all 50 states. And to see, you know, the evolution of export. I mean, how cool is that to see that we have craft distillers now? And Jeff, I loved when you were talking, you know, when we were talking to with Koval, that you saw that when you were traveling internationally. I mean, it's a cool thing. I love looking for all that craft spirits when I'm traveling too. And I think it's just a really amazing little jewel in the crown to say, you know, you did it. Good for you. Lots of hard work, lots of tears, lots of grit, lots of perseverance. And I think that's the definition of a craft spirits producer and distiller. And that's what, long story short, that's what makes me tick.
And what can we expect from your tenure as president? What are your biggest goals?
So I really am passionate about education. Courtney and Amber and Lucy are just killing it. So to continue serving them in the capacity to keep the attention on education. I love what we're doing with the ebook, right? Like starting and operating that distillery. So to support all of you, staff and all of our advisors. Of course, we talked about DTC. That's a huge thing for me. Another thing really is to engage, again, a lot of it, amazingly, Margie had in her monthly mash, and just to really stay engaged with TTB and to have those thoughtful conversations, just to continue that effort of modernizing our craft spirits industry and that landscape. One thing that I'm really, really wanting to focus on, and Becky was amazing as president getting us through the pandemic, the phone calls that she made and the engagement of calling all of our membership. So to me, that was so meaningful. And I would love to see our membership. If we have 2,700 craft distilleries in the country, I would love to see us hit that 1,000 distillery membership number, because I think that that will really help us with ACSA and to stay sustainable into the next decade. I mean, to think that we're now year 11. And so I really want to grow that membership and encourage all those talented newer generation distillers. They're that entrepreneurial spirit, right? And so to have them believe in themselves that they are going to be the future of ACSA, the future board, the future committee chairs, and to just continually grow that craft spirits market and really highlight innovation. One thing people may or may not know about me, and John, I love that you were saying that my bio from 2019, people may or may not know this. I generally don't give up on things when I love them a lot and I'm passionate about it. I always tell my kids, be passionate about what you want to do. And then it's not a job. It becomes your passion and an amazing career. If it's a job, I don't know why some people wake up every day for the grind. We grind, but we grind and do it passionately. I ran for the board in 2019. And then I ran for the board again. It took me 3 times to be elected to ACSA. And what I love about that is, as I look back, I wasn't ready to be on the ACSA board in 2019, and I wasn't ready to be on the board in 2021 either, or 2020, I guess it would be. I was elected, I guess, right into 2021, wasn't I? So that was humbling, because that allowed me to take a step back and really engage with Margie and PT. And they encouraged me to be a co-chair with PT on the Guild. And that was an honor, and still is. It remains that today, because there's so many people that I know we could pick up the phone and say, I have a challenge. How did you weather the storm? You know, what did you do? And so to really keep that open line of communication within our membership, and that mentoring side of it too, right? I mean, I think that that's really important to be that phone call away from, there's always somebody in a room that's there by themselves. And when I was at a convention, I was sitting at the breakfast table at a round table all by myself. And it was PT and Lee that came up to me and said, hey, what's your name? Where are you from? You know, why are you here? And it was that extension of somebody just being so kind and compassionate and just a friend in the industry. Really important, very, very passionate about legislation, clearly, the government affairs side of it. And then last year as vice president, it was an honor to work with Jessica and Becky, and then to be invited to fly out to New York and join all of you for the Craft Spirits Data Project. And I think that that is something that I really want to encourage our membership to share, so that we can take really solid data, that's another word that I didn't like 5 years ago, and share it and then come up with a strategy that's just going to benefit everybody within our industry.
I don't want to ask you for the strategy for Jay Carver, but I do want to give you a chance to talk about some of the exciting things that are going on now, or you know, in the year ahead. Like, what excites you about Jay Carver?
Our Explorers Club. And for everybody listening, go to the convention. That's another one, right? Convention in our 10 year. You guys know that that's what I'm super stoked about, because I get to see you guys all the time talking about it. We started an Explorers Club because this is our 10 year this month, believe it or not, is a celebration of when we started Jay Carver Distillery. And so we started an Explorers Club, and I learned all of that at the ACSA convention in Portland, came home so excited about it. And so we launched our Explorers Club in November. Tons of props and thanks to Kelly from Westward and Teresa, that did an incredible job talking through what it would like to, what it was like to start a club. So our Explorers Club, our 7 year rise. I love teaching my cocktail classes. You guys know that. And so being able to share, you know, our spirits, our long-term age spirits, really excited about our American single malt. And then just really telling the craft spirits story and engaging more and more people in Minnesota, because you would think people in Minnesota would know all the distilleries in Minnesota, though they don't, right? So it's that exciting job to continue to work with our restaurants that collaborate with us and just innovate the cocktail side of it, right? It's kind of like that chefiness. I love the chefiness of just pushing our team to still create really easy but cool craft cocktails. And then just to continue to tell that, you know, story, the tourism side of it. That's what's cool, is to bring people out to Waconia, work with our local chambers to really highlight small business in Minnesota. Still passionate about working with the same three farmers that we've worked with for a decade and telling their stories as well, because I think that agritourism is something that just resonates with people across the country, you know, because certain things grow better in certain regions and climates. And so we just always continue to tell that story. Hospitality is something that's going to continue to always be a passion for us at Jay Carver, you know, continually invite restaurants and retailers out to Jay Carver so that they can hear our story. We can hear theirs and then collaborate together. I think the tide just rises for everybody concerned.
I've got one last question for you, and it's just what is your advice to you're in a hallway, or you're talking to somebody at that table now, like when PT and Lee came up to you and they very quickly ask you for your advice on starting a distillery. What do you tell them, Gina?
Honestly, I would have talked for an hour straight 3 to 5 years ago. And now I listen more. I want them to talk to me for an hour, and then I'll fill in some snippets here and there of other things that they could look at potentially. And one of them was that, and to all of the work that was done with the Distillery 101, right? What I would do is encourage them to buy the ebook, not even a sales pitch. I would encourage them to take the Distilling 101 at the conventions. It's so much information. And talking with Greg from Lawrenceburg in Kentucky, you know, he giggled and said, "Oh my gosh, Gina, after talking with you for an hour," and we did, it was great. You know, he changed his label, he changed his bottle, he, you know, changed some of the messaging and design. And so I would say, if I were to go up to somebody, I would ask first of all, if they had 15, 30 minutes, knowing it was going to go into an hour, ask them what their story was, and then see if I could just encourage them to maybe think about some things a little bit differently.
I would encourage everybody too. We have to start integrating the term chefiness into our vocabulary, because I love that word.
I was typing it up and I said, is this a word, chefiness?
Well, it should be. It is now. It is definitely going to be one. And we're going to try to find a place in the magazine where we can use it at least once an issue.
All right. Well, I love chefiness. I think that, you know, those people that pour their heart and soul behind those craft spirits bars in distilleries, man, they are chefy. And I just think it's cool. You know, we tell people a lot of people can't believe that we squeeze about 200 pounds of citrus a week. You know, it's chefy.
So around this point in our conversation, I was about to stop recording, but Gina asked that we keep it rolling.
Yeah. You know, and you two say that you're done asking me questions. What I would like to say, and then here, I'm gonna, then you don't have to edit this out.
Oh, I'll stop recording for the—
Oh, purpose. No. Yeah. I want this recorded. No, I want this part recorded. Don't you dare.
Okay.
What I'm so grateful for Margie and ACSA and you, John and Jeff and, you know, Stephanie and just the incredible team, you know, Step Up Foundation. And then think of what you all do with the Craft Spirits magazine. We know what it's like to pour our hearts and souls and volunteer to ACSA and show up intentionally and do the best job that we can do. And say what we do, what we say, what we're going to do. And then to watch the passion of you two telling our stories. And I encourage everybody to listen to the past podcasts, to really listen to our past presidents and ACSA members. It's incredible. And I shared that with both of you. And then Margie challenged us and said, "What's on the front page of the last magazine?" And I wanted to raise my hand sitting in the front row. And it's like, oh my gosh, like the package award. And I knew the answer. And I was glad that I knew the answer, because there is such intentional decisions that you two make and the passion that you pour into everything that's on the website and the Craft Spirits magazine and the monthly mash and the webinars. You know, it was an honor to be on the vodka panel with Nate and Harv. So I want everybody to know that you are a huge foundation to ACSA as to the reason that we thrive and we are growing and we do have a voice. And I want everybody that listens to this to recognize and honor the work that you have done. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I don't know what to say. I'm getting a little misty-eyed now.
Thanks, Gina.
Well, we will edit that out, because I'm going to listen for that one.
We will every day try to live up to that.
That's our program for today. Thanks again to Gina Holman for joining us, and especially for those kind words at the end. You can learn more about Jay Carver at jcarverdistillery.com. We'll be back soon. Until then, thanks for listening, and cheers.